from all material activities and completely devoting oneself to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. This is confirmed by Srila Rupa Goswami. Anasaktasya vishayan yataharham upayunjataha nirbandha krishna sambandhe. For a Vaishnava, the renounced order means completely giving up attachment for material things and engaging non-stop in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The Mayavadi sannyasis, however, do not know how to engage everything in the service of the Lord. Because they have no devotional training, they think material objects to be untouchable, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. The Mayavadis think that the world is false, but the Vaishnava sannyasis do not think like this. Vaishnavas say, why should the world be false? It is reality, and it is meant for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For a Vaishnava sannyasi, renunciation means not accepting anything for personal use or for personal sense enjoyment. Devotional service means engaging everything for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 92. Premete vivala bahya nahi katsmaran radha deshe tina dina korila brahman. When proceeding toward Vrindavan, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was overwhelmed with ecstatic love for Krishna and he lost all remembrance of the external world. In this way he traveled continuously for 3 days in Radhadesh, the country where the Ganges River does not flow. Text 93. Nityananda Prabhu Mahaprabhu Bhulaya Ganga Tire Loya Aila Jamuna Baliya. First of all, Lord Nityananda bewildered Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by bringing him to the banks of the Ganges, saying that it was the river Jamuna. Text 94. Shantipura Acharyera Grihe Agaman Pratama Bhiksha Koila Tahan Ratre Sankirtan. After 3 days, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to the house of Advaita Acharya at Shantipur and accepted alms there. This was his first acceptance of alms. At night, he performed congregational chanting there. Purport. It appears that in his transcendental ecstasy, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu forgot to eat for 3 continuous days. He was then misled by Nityananda Prabhu, who said that the river Ganges was the Jamuna. Because the Lord was in the ecstasy of going to Vrindavan, he was engladdened to see the Jamuna. Although in actuality, the river was the Ganges. In this way, the Lord was brought to the house of Advaita Prabhu at Shantipur after 3 days, and he accepted food there. As long as the Lord remained there, he saw his mother, Sachi Devi, and every night executed congregational chanting with all the devotees. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnana Jnana Shulakaya Chakshuru Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Mukam karoti vachalam pangum lam kayate girim jatkripa tamahum vande shri gurum dinataram. Nama om Vishnu paraya krishna preshtaya bhutale srimate bhaktivedanta swamini tinamne. Namaste saraswati devi gauravani pracharine nirvishesha shunyavadi paschati deshataram. Vancha kalpaturu vyashtra kripa santhoya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha. On Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Madhya Lila begins just after the Lord's taking sannyas. So that's what, that's what we hear about here. Actually, I was thinking, because it's really auspicious to hear several times, maybe 3 times in the last chapter of Madhyakanda of Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Vrindavan Das Thakur assures us that hearing about the pastime of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's taking sannyas will break all our bonds of material attachment. I think it's 3 times in the chapter. So I think I've read this before, but I was going to say perhaps it won't hurt to hear it again, but it probably will. in some ways. So, Lord Chaitanya, at a certain point in his pastimes in Namadvipa, after his initiation, Lord Chaitanya becomes so immersed in ecstasy that it becomes impossible for him to live as he had been living previously. And you know, we just recently discussed how he would come to class in ecstasy and just only talk about Krishna. At one point, he didn't even talk about Krishna. He just started chanting, Gopi, Gopi. And his students became a little peeved with him. And one of the students suggested that perhaps he was mistaken in his practice. He said, actually, shouldn't you be remembering Krishna? I mean, you don't gain liberation by remembering any gopis, cowgirls. You gain liberation by remembering Krishna, by chanting Krishna. So that enraged Lord Chaitanya, and he took after the student with the stick. Now, I know that if I went into class and started chanting even Krishna, Krishna, much less gopi, gopi, and the students objected and said, look, you're supposed to talk to us about five paragraph essays. And I went after one of them with a stick, that would pretty much be it for me too. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered that he had a mission, and that mission wasn't going to be easily fulfilled if he stayed in Navadvipa and continued at trying to make a living teaching, because people didn't respect him. Oh, he used to be this very nice logician, very clever Brahmin, and now he's gone a little nuts. So who would send their kids to a school where the teacher's just a little nuts? He's not going to teach them grammar. He's not going to teach them logic. And he's just going to start chanting Hare Krishna. So he decided that the way to resolve the problem was by accepting sannyas, because, well, nobody's going to respect me in this situation. But if I take sannyas, then people have to respect me, because that's our culture. You see a sannyasi, first time you see a sannyasi, you hit the deck, you offer obeisances. And so he resolved to do that. And he shared that resolution with a few of his associates. It eventually got back to Vishnupriya Devi in the form of a rumor. He came home one day, and she was all depressed. And he asked her what was wrong. She said, nothing. She said, oh, come on, what's wrong? She said, nothing. Finally, she told him that she'd heard these rumors and asked him if it was true. And he said, well, according to Lochan Das in Sri Chaitanya Mangal, Lord Chaitanya told her, in this lifetime, it's our dharma to cry out of compassion for all the suffering living entities. So that's our lot. So we have to be happy with that. And then he told Lord Nityananda just what his plan was, what the timeline was, the whens and wheres. And he asked him to share it with a couple of intimate associates. And then he went to Katwa. And took sannyas from Keshava Bharati. So Vrindavan Das says, and when the devotees started to hear, when the rumor started going around that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going to take sannyas, of course they all started, as we would say, started freaking out. It was like their whole life was being taken away. So he assured them, I will always be with you in two ways, through the bliss of deity worship and the congregational chanting of the holy names. So please, if you immerse yourselves in these two things, then we will always be together. And then he left in the middle of the night. And I had the wrong page marked. So he went to Katra and bathed in the Ganges and approached Keshav Bharati and told him, now's the time. So after some time, Vishwambar controlled himself and sat down surrounded by his associates. Keshav Bharati was absorbed in an ocean of bliss on seeing the devotional sentiments displayed by the Lord. He therefore offered his prayers to the Lord. The devotion that I have seen today with my eyes is not found in anyone other than the Lord himself. Yet I think that to teach people in general, you will accept me as your guru. The Lord said, please do not deceive me. Give me initiation so that I may become a servant of Lord Krishna. Speaking in this way, the Lord passed the night with everyone, engaged in the happiness of Krishna Katha. Early the next morning, the Lord of all planets rose and instructed Chandrasekhar, you're qualified in the performance of all Vedic rituals. And therefore, I appoint you as my representative. On the order of the Lord, Chandrasekhar Acharya began to perform the required Vedic rituals. The variety of ingredients that people from the surrounding villages brought cannot be described. They brought milk, yogurt, butter, mung dal, betel, sandalwood, flowers, sacred threads, and cloth. No one knew where the varieties of eatables it poured in came from or who brought them. Everyone who came chanted the holy names in ecstasy. Indeed, the chanting of Hari Hari was the only sound that could be heard. Then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the life of all, sat down to have his head shaved, including the Shika. When the barber came to shave the Lord, a tumultuous sound of weeping arose. The barber hesitated to shave the Lord's curly hair. Before he even touched the Lord's head, he began to cry. The devotees, headed by Nityananda, all started weeping and rolling on the ground. What to speak of the devotees, even the people in general all began to cry in lamentation. One woman said, who has invented this system of sannyas? You can see her, you can almost hear her lip curling, right? Even reading this probably puts me in danger of being yelled at today, but there we go. Speaking like this, all the ladies all sighed deeply. Hidden from view, all the demigods also cried. In this way, the entire universe was filled with the sound of crying. Such compassion was shown by Sri Gaurasundar that even dry wood and stone melted. This pastime of the Lord was displayed for the deliverance of the living entities, and everyone's weeping was evidence of this. Sri Gaurachandra was greatly agitated by the mellows of ecstatic love. He constantly shed tears and his body trembled. Vishwambar got up and exclaimed, chant! Chant! As Mukunda began to sing, the Lord continuously danced. Even when the Lord sat, he was unable to remain steady. He trembled and tears flowed from his eyes out of ecstatic love. In this way, the Lord constantly roared, Hari Bol! The barber was therefore unable to perform his task. Somehow or other, in the mellows of ecstatic love, the Lord's head was finally shaved by the end of the day. Thereafter, the Lord of all took his bath in the Ganges and sat for his sannyas ceremony. The Vedas declare that Sri Gaurachandra is the spiritual master of everyone. The Lord, on some pretext, then spoke something to Keshava Bharati. The Lord said, in a dream, some Mahajana appeared to me and spoke some sannyas mantra in my ear. Please examine whether it is appropriate or not. Speaking in this way, the Lord spoke the mantra into Keshava Bharati's ear. Thus the Lord, by trickery, made Keshava Bharati his disciple, and Keshava Bharati was struck with great wonder. Keshava Bharati said, this is the best of all mantras. By the mercy of Lord Krishna, what is unknown to you? According to the instructions of the Lord, the broad-minded Keshava Bharati then spoke that very mantra into the ear of the Lord. The auspicious sound of the holy names was heard from the four directions as the jewel of Vaikuntha accepted the order of sannyas. When the Lord put on enchanting saffron dress, he appeared as beautiful as millions of cupids. His beautiful body and head were decorated with sandalwood pulp and flower garlands. Holding his danda and kamandalu in his hands, the Lord was overwhelmed in ecstatic love. The beautiful face of the Lord was more attractive than millions of moons, and his two eyes were filled with tears of love. That wonderful sannyasi form of the Lord will be elaborately described by Vedavyas. Sri Vedavyas has described in his Vishnu Sahasranam that the Lord appears in one of his incarnations as a sannyasi. Now this statement has been fulfilled by the best of the brahmanas. This secret is well known to the society of Vaishnavas. The magnanimous Keshava Bharati then began to think of a name to give to the Lord. I cannot find such a Vaishnava in the 14 worlds. This is my conviction. Therefore, I will give a name that is not found anywhere. Then my desire will be fulfilled. Although the disciple of Bharati should be named Bharati, that name is not appropriate for him. As that fortunate topmost sannyasi was thinking like this, Shuddha Saraswati, the transcendental goddess of learning, appeared on his tongue. Selecting the suitable name, the pure-hearted Keshava Bharati placed his hand on the chest of the Lord and spoke, "You have induced the people of the world to chant the name of Krishna, and by inaugurating the movement of Sankirtan, you have awakened people's consciousness. Therefore, your name will be Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Because of you, everyone will become fortunate." When that best of the sannyasis spoke this, everyone chanted, "Jai, Jai," and flowers were showered down on them. The Vaishnavas floated in waves of transcendental happiness as the tumultuous vibration of Hari Hari filled the four directions. The devotees then offered obeisances to Keshava Bharati, and even the Lord felt satisfaction on receiving his name. In this way, all the devotees fell flat, offering obeisances as the holy name of Sri Krishna Chaitanya manifest. By accepting sannyas, the glorious Lord thus became famous as Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Lord Sri Chaitanya externally, eternally performs his pastimes, which are seen by those who have received his mercy. Only Nityananda Swarup knows all the many other pastimes that took place there. By his merciful instructions, I have written just a brief description in this book. I offer my respectful obeisances unto all the Vaishnavas so that they may disregard my offenses. Millions of Veda Vyasas will elaborately describe the pastimes of the Lord in the Vedas. Thus, the Lord's acceptance of sannyas is described in this Madhya Kanda. Whoever hears this pastime will certainly become a servant of Lord Sri Chaitanya. By hearing this pastime of the Lord's acceptance of sannyas in this Madhya Kanda, one will receive the wealth of Krishna Prema. O Sri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Prabhu, my only desire is that I should never forget you. Sri Gaur Sundar is the Lord of my life. Therefore, this great hope is there in my heart. Whoever says, "I am the servant of Nityananda," will certainly attain the Lord's darshan. Lord Nityananda is most dear to Sri Chaitanya. May I never become bereft of association with the Lord's servant. Lord Nityananda is the bestower of love to the entire universe. Therefore, let me worship Sri Gaurchandra through him. Anyone who wants to cross the ocean of birth and death and drown in the ocean of devotional service should worship Lord Nityananda. Lord Gaurchandra is making me speak just as a puppet master makes his puppets dance. A bird cannot reach the end of the sky, but flies only as far as its strength allows. In the same way, there is no end to the topics of Lord Chaitanya. One can narrate them only as far as his strength allows. Accepting Sri Krishna Chaitanya and Nityananda Prabhu as my life and soul, I, Vrindavan Das, sing the glories at their lotus feet. O Sri Chaitanya Chandra, I offer you my repeated obeisances. You are the personification of Krishna's blissful pastimes, and you are extremely beautiful, having a dazzling golden luster. You have awarded the people of the world the topmost mellows of ecstatic love for Krishna. We often hear in different quarters different discussions of how we can institute Varnashram Dharma. And Varnashram Dharma means somehow or other helping people find a situation in one of the four varnas and one of the four ashramas. And so we, just as Gyanagamana Prabhu was speaking yesterday about the waning of the brahmachari ashram and the hopeful waxing in the future of the brahmachari ashram. We all know how we feel when we see a party of brahmacharis come through. These are usually young men on their way somewhere, just traveling around. And wherever they stop, they go out and distribute as many books about Krishna consciousness as they can. We all used to live like that. I mean, there was a day when there wasn't such a term as Sankirtan devotee. We were all Sankirtan devotees. There wasn't anything else to do. Get up, as I was mentioning last week, you get up in the morning, take a bath, go to Mangalarti, chant japa, take prasadam, go out on Sankirtan. Come back for lunch, or stay out for lunch, have lunch, and the lunch might be brought to us. And then more Sankirtan in the afternoon. And then we come back to the temple, bathe. If there's anything left over from lunch, maybe have a snack before we went for more kirtan and Bhagavad Gita class. There wasn't anything. We were all Sankirtan devotees. There wasn't such a distinction. There was no designation, Sankirtan devotee and, I don't know, whatever the heck the rest of us might have been. We were all Sankirtan devotees, and that was our life and soul. And it was very, very purifying. So the Brahmachari ashram is very important. Grihastha ashram, as anybody here will happily acknowledge, is very important. Vanaprastha ashram, gradually withdrawing from the responsibilities and obligations of family life, the comforts and problems of family life, that's also important. But what shouldn't be neglected is the sannyas ashram. It's actually as important as the rest, likely to be the smallest of all the ashrams. But we shouldn't neglect it in any of the ways that we sometimes have over the last few years. And of course, such neglect and such, sometimes we even hear derision of the sannyas ashram and those who live in the sannyas ashram. And that's probably natural considering the kinds of things that have gone on over the last 35, 40 years in that ashram. So many people are quick to point out however many it was of Srila Prabhupada's disciples that he gave sannyas to, and how few of them are still living in the sannyas ashram. And among those who are still living in the sannyas ashram, superficially, how many of them aren't really living like sannyasis? So we hear this stuff all the time. And we hear people saying, we should forget the sannyas ashram. After all, it's forbidden in Kali Yuga, just like, having a child with your dead husband's brother and or sacrifices and the other things. But the fact is that after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so many devotees, even during his Leela, so many of his several of his most intimate associates were sannyasis. Some of them formal sannyasis and others just living like sannyasis. Brahmananda Puri and so many others, stalwart sannyasis, they're considered to be the root of the Chaitanya tree. You don't have a very healthy tree if you don't have strong roots. The six Goswamis and many of their followers accepted a sort of informal sannyas that sort of gradually became kind of institutionalized, not exactly institutionalized, but sort of solidified as it has the Paramahansa Ashram. And especially since Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, so many followers of Lord Chaitanya have worked to revive the institution of Tridandi Sannyas, which is especially meant for preaching. Now, why sannyas at all? We're exhorted, just as we see in this purport, Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 91, since sannyas is meant for immersion in devotional practice and service. Chanting, mainly chanting, studying, writing, and preaching in different ways, according to that particular devotee's talents and interests and things. Now, can't we do this as grihasthas? Sure. And we know that there are so many of us here, even in this community, this is rather unusual because there are so many of us here, and a good number of the grihasthas here, along with their responsibilities of maintaining their families, are engaged. Some of them actually are able to engage completely in devotional service. Even their maintenance is a kind of devotional service. You know, some devotees who take care of cows and raise their own food and things like that, and go out and preach as much as they can. I'm thinking particularly of someone like Adikarta, who doesn't have a small family. He had as many kids as most of us, and the kids are all pretty much grown up on their own, and he's living very happily with his wife, and they're always engaged in devotional service. They're such wonderful devotees. They're very sweet to be around. When either of them leads a kirtan, everybody's hearts automatically kind of like warms up, and you go, ah, okay. And they're all, you know, Adikarta is always, goes into Gainesville for the Krishna Lunch Program. He goes out to rainbow festivals and so many of these, always looking for an opportunity to go and have kirtan and preach Krishna consciousness and sell Srila Prabhupada's books. And he's not alone in that. There's so many devotees who are able to engage like that. However, many of us find that although we may have services that we want to perform, services that we could perform, we find that the obligations of family life impinge on that to some extent. And to the extent that we perceive that, we may eventually find ourselves drawn somewhere else. And after a long time, after the kids are grown up, after a long time, that's a kind of a natural thing. And sometimes, as with Srila Prabhupada, the spiritual master personally comes and says, it's time. What are you waiting for? There's so much to do. You know, saddle up, cowboy, and let's get going. So, and that's a natural thing. And it's not that every one of us has to do that necessarily. But some of us will. Some of us will as an example, and some of us will because that's going to be the best way for us because of just the situation of, you know, our own mentalities and the rest of our family's mentalities and so many other circumstances. That's going to be the best way for us to actually immerse ourselves in increasing the intensity of our practice and increasing our service to Guru and Gauranga. So that shouldn't be disparaged when it happens. People actually, I mean, all these things that happen are going to be there. The wife and kids are going to be alternately excited and proud and devastated. And people will worry about, you know, they'll worry about, well, this guy's old. How's he going to, you know, and it's not like he's got a whole bunch of disciples. How's he going to take care of himself? What about her? And what about the grandchildren? You know, they can't go see grandma and grandpa. There's so many things, but the thing is, we're all going to be separated sometime or another, either voluntarily or involuntarily. And in this community, we have plenty of experience that shows us involuntarily is not a bunch of fun. Voluntarily is not a bunch of fun either. But involuntarily, I mean, it's, you can ask grandpa, stay, don't go to the forest. And when grandpa's old and fading, you can say, oh, grandpa, don't die. Oh, dear, don't die. But what are you going to do? At one point, the clock's up, game's over, the buzzer goes off, and it's time to move on. So if some of us can do that voluntarily, even moving from long, successful, happy Krishna conscious marriages, if some of us can do that, that will add back some of the dignity that we perceive as the sannyasa ashram as having lost over the last couple of decades. And what that sannyas means is, ultimately going to the forest, for us it means going to the forest of Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya took sannyas and he went to the forest looking for Krishna, headed for Vrindavan. And he had a kind of an intermediate goal of spending some time in the forest near this temple of Akreshwar. Then he turned around and came back to the Mayapur area, spent some time in Shantipur at Sri Advaita's house, and then eventually went to Jagannath Puri. Then he went to Vrindavan and came back to Jagannath Puri. So ultimately, that's what that means. It means searching for Krishna, giving all. Srila Prabhupada explained in his first canto purports what Tridandi Sannyas means. It means that your work, words, and thoughts are all engaged 100% in Krishna's service. That's what it means. Whatever your dress is, whatever your external ashram is, that's sannyas. That's actual Tridandi Sannyas. But some people ought to try to see if they can restore some dignity. Some of the dignity that the dignity that we perceive to have been lost by that. And the only way to do that is for some good men to expand their lives, make their lives and their wives' lives larger by giving themselves to everybody, giving up that which is most dear for Krishna's service, and giving themselves to the service of everybody without any conditions. Because the thing is, if you're worried about your wife and something comes up, you can't dash off to the ends of the earth to some dangerous situation. You can't just pick up and go. If you're thinking, oh, I have to make this arrangement for my wife and that arrangement for my kids and that arrangement, this arrangement for my grandkids, and everybody has to be, But if you're practically speaking dead to them and something comes up, then you go. Imagine Srila Prabhupada sitting in Calcutta with his wife, with his aging wife and his growing children, and thinking, still in household life, and thinking, I'm going to salt away some money every month so that I can go to America to preach, spread Krishna consciousness. Mrs. Day is probably going to say, well, how much? I'm having a hard time buying cookies for tea time, for crying out loud. And you want to, and you're going to start salting money. It doesn't work. But, and even as a sannyasi, he ran into so many objections. Mrs. Morarji, what did she tell him? You crazy old man, you'll die there. Right? It's cold. And you're old. Your health's not so hot. And even his godbrothers thought it was a kind of a fool's errand. Wow, it's a little overambitious, don't you think? So some of us need to be able to be free. It's kind of like going back to those brahmachari days. Back when I was a brahmachari, Gorsundar said, we need you to go out to the place at the North Shore and do some gardens out there and go door to door out in the country. Okay, that's what I did. And if he said, why don't you go to the farm on the Big Island? Fine. At one point, he wanted to send Turiyadasan. He had a plan to send Turiyadasan and me to what was then called the New Hebrides. I think it's now Vanuatu. To preach and plant tulsi trees everywhere. And if he had said so, and said, okay, here's the ticket, here's a boat ticket or a plane ticket or something to the New Hebrides, we would have gone. And when I was a brahmachari that he said, okay, you ever thought about going to Peru? I said, well, yeah, actually when I was a kid, I used to want to go there. And he said, well, let's go. Why don't you go and we'll see if we can establish Krishna consciousness all over South America. So in a way, it's just kind of like going back to those brahmachari days when you're free. You don't have necessarily the physical vigor that you might have, but it's that immersion, that deep engagement in responsible service, that's actually a tonic. And we may find that it invigorates those men who are able to do that. And the ladies who thought, you know, their business was taking care of this creaky old man, they get to take care of Radhasham Sundar, Krishna and Balaram, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, get to increase their service to the other devotees, and also kind of broaden the scope of their own service. So when I read this, I thought, if we're going to talk about Varnashram, that has to include this ashram as well. Otherwise, it's not real Varnashram. It's just some other sort of thing. And again, it's not that they're, goodness knows our society can't support so many sannyasis in the world. But the thing is, back in 1970, when four of our new sannyasi godbrothers were excused from ISKCON, we might say, they went off and did wonderful things. They didn't die because they didn't have some sort of institutional support. Someone showed up in Gainesville, Florida, for crying out loud. Prabhupada called it this remote corner of the world. Vishnu Jan Maharaj ended up in Texas, and so many devotees benefited from his otherwise he might not have gone to Texas. So we wouldn't have Adi Dev Prabhu and so many other devotees among us. Someone else would probably have gone, but Vishnu Jan Maharaj, he just kind of draws people from wherever you are. Got to be a devotee because his personality was so magnetic. Anyway, any questions or comments, or I'm ready for ladies' water bottles to be thrown at me. Madan Mohan Prabhu?
There's a general mentality that there's always somebody else that can do that. Isn't it just like that? There's the other devotees. That's like, I think one time you had mentioned about 1977 when the 11, where that situation was happening. And you, in one sense, kind of felt a relief. Well, somebody's...
It's covered.
Someone's going to do it.
Was it some story about some dust in a corner or something? And Srila Prabhupada asking a devotee, do you see the dust in that corner? And he would say, oh, no, I don't see any dust in the corner. He said, yeah, because if you saw any dust in the corner, you'd have to go clean it up. And if we see something that needs to be done, that means it's ours to do. There's so much to be done. We're thinking, the Krishna consciousness movement is so large nowadays. And, there's so many devotees. But, if you go around the country, you may find so many corners here and there where there are devotees living. But too often, they're living very quietly, not attracting a lot of attention to themselves. And perhaps not very active in their preaching, for one reason or another. No need to necessarily judge that. But do we see some like Krishna conscious activity going on? I'm just thinking of my older daughter lives in Montana. As far as we can tell, there are no other Hare Krishna devotees in the entire enormous state of Montana. can't find any sign of devotees. And she's got her job and her house and her husband and son to take care of, and so she doesn't feel that she has the energy and time to really go out and make devotees there. But somebody ought to. There aren't a lot of people in Montana, especially when you consider the size of the state, but there are some. And they're all suffering for want of Krishna consciousness. And there's so many places where, I mean, we really, Prabhupada said every town and village, and we talk about every, you know, oh yeah, there's been devotees in every town and village, but maybe we need to go back to those towns and villages. Just as I was thinking, someone was talking about somewhere about changes in some book distribution policies, and people were saying, yeah, street sankirtan, door to door, they're kind of passe, they're not really appropriate anymore. And I thought, besides, who wants Jehovah's Witnesses showing up at your door? And I thought, you know, when we did door to door preaching in Hawaii, it was great. It was great. People would ask us in. This is like three of us started it in maybe February or March of 1971. People would ask us into their homes. So not everybody. Plenty of doors were slammed in our faces. Many people would ask us into our homes and have conversations. They'd ask us questions. We'd have conversations about religion and spiritual life and society and culture. Sometimes they'd offer us water or juice or milk. Sometimes they'd give us fruits or bags of rice or something to bring back to the temple. During mango season, we'd bring more mangoes back to the temple than the devotees could eat. And we kept track. We had these Thomas Brother map books that had, you know, every street on the island of Oahu. And we would keep track with a pen of which blocks we had covered so that we would know where to pick up. And we had pretty much covered all of Honolulu and Kailua and Pearl City and Aiea. And when we lived out on the North Shore in 71 and maybe 72, we covered a lot of that. And then the devotees on Kauai and Maui and the Big Island did that as well. We'd go out, when I was living on the farm, there were days when we would go into Hilo and we'd pick streets and we'd go preaching door to door there. And it was also good for us because it was a reminder for us. Material life's not all that hot. These people's lives are so empty that they fill their houses with so much garbage, trying to fill that God-sized hole in their hearts. So it was actually quite a wonderful program. And you think, oh yeah, we accomplished so much. But that was almost 40 years ago. I think somebody needs to go back to Diamond Head Road and Kailua and Kalihi and all those different places. And it's the same here. There's a lot to do. And so if some of us can be cut loose to kind of try to make things happen in places where it might not be, that'd be a really good thing. It's not covered. Madame Prabhu?
Are you suggesting a senior Sankirtan party here?
Everywhere.
I had just one.
We need to make more time. We need to make, starting with me, we need to make more time to go out on Sankirtan that we have here and find ways to preach. And, you know, Mukhya and Keshav are every morning are exhorting us, you know, okay, this is going on, let's get out there. And we're all thinking, oh, God, it's cold outside. But here and everywhere, get out of Alachua, hit the road. You did that this last summer. So let's...
A question. With Prabhupada, he said that he had his spiritual master appear to him in a dream a couple times and was encouraging him to take sannyas, and he would say, oh, how horrible he would to take sannyas. He was not. So what actually happened in Srila Prabhupada's life that had him make that transition?
What happened in his life that had him make that transition?
Yeah, because he said he had a couple dreams, and I remember that part. And then, of course, we saw him as a sannyasi.
He left in the middle of the night, frankly. Sridhar Maharaj, his godbrother Sridhar Maharaj, who lived upstairs, when he had those dreams, he went up. you wake up from such a dream kind of startled, let's say. And on those occasions, Sridhar Maharaj says, Prabhupada came up right then, in the middle of the night. Maharaj, gets up, oh, what's up? They sit down and talk, Srila Prabhupada tells him about the dream, and he says, well, yeah, let's not rush it. And then the second time, he said, look, I'm not the one to do this. I've got too close a connection with your family, your wife. It's going to be, would end up being really resentful, and it's not, it wouldn't be good for her spiritual life. So, maybe some other arrangement can we make. And let's not, let's make, let's see that it happens, but let's not rush it. And then Sridhar Maharaj said that when he woke up the next morning, he went back to sleep, and when he woke up the next morning, there was all kinds of ruckus downstairs. Srila Prabhupada was just gone. He just picked up and left with nothing. So he felt the urgency of the situation, and he just acted. He had arranged beforehand that Pishima would help take care of his wife and kids, because a couple of the girls hadn't been married yet. But I mean, that's, he got the order. He was already engaged in trying to preach, very vigorously trying to preach, and he got this order. If you cut loose, then you can just preach. You don't have to worry about anything else. The active principle is the order of the spiritual master. Keshava becomes a pitch.
Well, there was a thing about me or tea. I wonder, everything can be used. So I was just thinking maybe the tea was the...
Well, yeah, the way Prabhupada sometimes told the story was that the last straw was this... what did she sell? His Bhagavatam to buy cookies for tea time. But the way Sridhar Maharaj remembered it was that there were these two dreams, and then the second time, he just took off. Everybody got up in the morning and he wasn't there anymore. Purushottama, did you have a comment or a question? I know. You weren't volunteering to take sannyas? I could see Mother Jatamangsi, just like a banana tree when the hurricane comes. Oh, anything else really quickly? Thank you so much for your patience. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.